This is the 14th of November, 1978, Santa Fe, New Mexico. We're having a session with Bartholomew. Good morning, Master.
Good morning.
The first question.
I'd like to first say I'm very pleased I was to have all of us gathered together again this weekend. It was a very lovely time for me. And I certainly do appreciate all that transpired on many levels this weekend. I feel it was a very significant time, and the beginnings are very important in such movements, and I was well pleased, and I am very grateful.
Shall we
certainly
start? The first question...
Excuse me.
Yes.
I'm sorry to keep interrupting,
no
but
problem.
I did... there was one bit of business, so to speak, that was rather left hanging, and I feel I would like to speak to it at this time. It is my understanding that our friend to the south was thinking of putting out some kind of a publication to his mailing list, communication with, in regards to my affiliation with the school that you're going to begin.
Yeah.
Would you please tell him that I feel that to as great a degree as possible there should be very little bridging between those two ideas at this time. I feel that the school should be able to, at least for a year, take on its own identity, its own movement as something separate from what we will be doing, because I feel that too many people will be concerned about what kind of business this all is that you're involved in. And I don't feel that kind of pressure need be applied on the school at the beginning stages. Within a year, if all goes as I see it at this moment, much on my side of things will be begun in another part of this land space,
yes,
that they have taken so kindly to devoting to our service here. And at that time, I feel another structure could be put in, either temporary in the trailer sense or otherwise, whatever, where much of our work will be done. And I feel that there should be a separation, certainly in the minds of the people at this stage. So I would ask that nothing be sent out at this time. I feel that we must make our way more clearly before we send out anything. And of course, within a year or so time, I feel that it would be very helpful in certain ways to have the word go out, but in a way there's no point in the word going out yet, because we will have no facilities for the people who might wish to come.
I see.
And the writing of that must be very carefully supervised. Whatever it is that goes out, I would be very grateful if I could hear it first.
I see.
Because the way things are phrased make a great deal of difference on the earth plane, and I don't want to mislead, yet I want to be very clear. So I would be grateful if you would... Well, I'm sure he will be hearing this tape.
Yes.
Yes, I see. Well, then, my dear friend, if you would be so kind as to... I appreciate and understand the motive, and I'm very grateful for it. And it will come in great deal of aid to us, but I think we should wait on the timing of it for at least a year. And if you would be so kind as to bring it up again within a year's time, then perhaps together you and I could formulate, sir, my friend,
yes,
to the south here.
Yes.
The good doctor, he and I could formulate some kind of a message that he feels would be apropos, and that I feel would cover our position adequately.
I see.
Excuse me for interrupting.
No problem. This first question is derived from comments and questions that have come from Socorro. Why don't you feel, you Bartholomew, that the handling of individual problems is important, in the sense that you do not give personal readings as, quote, psychics, unquote, give personal readings?
Mm-hmm. Yes, well, I understand the motive of this question, and I deeply understand and respond to the need there. And what the woman is trying to say is that why am I so general? Why cannot I be more specific in aiding problems? But unfortunately, I am not that kind of a worker. Different people have different jobs, and that is not my job. And there are many who are extremely able, capable, and willing to do this kind of work on the earth plane. And I sincerely suggest to this woman that she, if she feels the need for guidance within from this kind of source, that she cast about in the state. And there are mediums in the state who are excellent, who would be able to greatly answer her questions. So that stands. And the reason that I do not give the deep readings is simply this. It is my observation of lifetimes of work with people on the earth plane that the problems that they have on the ego level come and go and they change. And for one day it will be one problem and the next day it will be another problem. Now, I understand that at a certain level of development people are very concerned with their personal problems because they feel that each problem is unique, and if they could only solve this one problem, say, what I should do with my life as far as a job is concerned, well, if I solved that one thing, then all else would be solved.
Mm-hmm.
But on careful observation, I found this not to be true. First of all, even in the subject of job fields, so many changes are made, constantly made, so even that is not a valid question. Then the question of, well, should I marry a certain person? My experience is that people don't rely on this kind of data for those questions.
Mm-hmm.
They do what they want to do. They go about it in their own way. They're not really interested in getting any opposition to their ideas. What they're interested in getting is validation for what they really want to do.
I see.
Now, there are some rare souls who really do seek an answer, that they want to know the divine guidance, that they themselves feel a yearning toward a certain movement, but they question the validity. And I think psychics are very helpful in this way. But also realize that you will only respond to that which you want to do anyway. There's no psychic on the earth plane, and this is where every psychic should rest at ease, that they put out the information, but it is true that each individual ego will take from that reading what they want and throw the rest out.
Right.
And it is simply a fact. So I don't bother with it because these are such transient problems. They come and they go. They are my aim. I hope that people will understand when I say this. And I know it sounds, from their perception, quite arrogant, but I must say it anyway. My work is really with those who seek to be initiates into the truth. And the truth does not lie on the earth manipulative ego mechanism. It
mm-hmm.
does not lie there. So therefore, people who are very tied up with and concerned with that, then this is a clear statement to them that they and I are probably not in close harmony.
I see.
There will be some help that I can give them in an ancillary side way, but basically, they will probably move through life and find another teacher that will be more helpful to them in the practical. I am not at all stating that this is wrong. I am simply stating that it is a fact that some people not are better than others or more spiritual than others, but the key is are more devoted to the goal than others. This is the place where people separate themselves out. If you are totally devoted to the goal of understanding and of dropping old beliefs and moving into divine harmony, if this is your real goal, then there's a rapport between myself and whoever could answer that question. If you are, on the other hand, quite mediocre and are really concerned with marriage situations or I don't know, there's so many other things that one could be concerned with, and if this is your primary focus, then the chances are that there's another teacher down the road somewhere for you who will be more meaningful. It is simply that different teachers are sent to teach different things, and I am not sent for that purpose.
I see.
Anyone listening to this tape who either now or in the future has looked within and decided and knows that the one, of course fluctuating, but that the main goal of their life is integration with God or the knowledge of the one truth or however you wish to put it, union with the divine. If that is really their goal, then they and I have a bridge and we can work together. So it is not to say that people shouldn't listen to the tapes and make use of part of the data. I'm simply saying that I understand the arising of the question, but I also feel that I must stand firm on my commitment to my work. And I hope that others understand this and do not interpret it as a lack of love or care on my part or even concern. I have deep and abiding concern for everyone who hears this tape. I have deep and abiding concern for them. And there may be a time when they realize that the movements on the earth plane are simply repetitive of old patterns, and they are seeking to free themselves up and move into the real joy and the light that stands there for everyone. But I also feel that they must make their own assessment and decide whether this kind of work is... I'm asking for a total life. I'm not... You see, this is what I'm asking, and I realize that this is a high goal. I'm asking for a total surrender of a total life. You know, I'm asking for your thoughts to be constantly and repeatedly turned to the highest source as you can envision it. I'm asking you to turn over all of your ego desires and needs and place them in the hands of the fire of the one God, and to be transmuted into energy that will best make his plan functioning on earth. Oh yes, I understand I'm asking for the whole life. And many people are simply not ready, and that's wonderful, that's fine. Everything in its own good time. But please understand, just as there are different teachers for different subject fields, I am not here to teach that subject, and there are many who are so gifted who, and if it is really your desire to be led to someone who can help you with that, the movements on the earth plane, I'm quite sure that many people have access to those names and follow whatever feels right. I hope I have made this clear.
Yes, I should say.
I hope. And if there is any further questioning, you know, please feel free to ask. I realize that so many people say, but if I only knew the answer to this one thing,
everything
then I
would
be
change.
Free. I would be free then to drop everything and move into your work, Bartholomew, mm-hmm. into your work. Well, with all deep respect for that perception, that is not the way we view it at all.
Mm-hmm.
That there will always be, the ego will always be able to manufacture a bona fide need that has to be met before one can go about God's work.
I see.
And so that's fine. You know, everybody has their own time and their own cycles. And of course, one thing which I don't know if we've spoken of, but which is very true, one of the reasons why certain people in certain age groups are not able to turn over their life is that there is such a thing as repaying of karmic ties and debts. And this usually takes place in the first part of your life. And then you usually are released at certain times. I won't make any definite statement of ages, because then everybody will become very solid in that and is really very flexible.
I
in
see.
Some people's cases, it won't happen until their 50s, 60s. Some never finish.
Uh-huh.
But others finish in their 30s. It just depends. But what is true is that there is a time in the beginning of each life when ties of the old and then come into. It is rare that you would incarnate into a family that did not have old ties with you in some way or other.
Yeah.
And those early life years of on the earth plane of love and courtship and perhaps marriage, perhaps not, but all that union and the movement of the children and the children that are born to you, all of these things are very karmically predicted.
I see.
These are karmic relationships brought in to either pay off, in your terms, pay off some karma, or to get a chance to have some paid off on your behalf and so forth. Exchange is made, it is a better way of putting it, I think. And the early years of one's life, certainly the teenage years, the 20s, and oftentimes on into the 30s, these years are used for this purpose. So until these lessen and break their bonds, oftentimes the thrust is not moved into the great realm. You know, the Indians, not the American Indians, but the Eastern Indians knew this. And even set aside such rigid times.
Oh, with the different cycles within
yes.
the life of a Brahmin.
Yes, but you see, what was interesting that they didn't know about is the men were always the ones who were allowed to do this.
Right.
But they didn't realize that when they moved out, they oftentimes relieved their wives of the same burden. It was very interesting.
The wives were ready for it,
the
too.
The wives were also ready. I mean, maybe there was a little hesitancy about the finances and so on, but many times, you know, the children by that time were out in the world, and the wife was also able, if she was a seeker of the one God, to turn her life into that. And oftentimes the woman ended up being the benefit, because she didn't spend a lot of her time wandering out, taking up time with other things like movements and how to get the food and where to go and who to see and so on. She just stayed in her home and very quietly, if she was a real devotee, went about her business quietly. And many exalted women have come out of that movement. So I know on one hand you can view it and say how unfair for the woman. I would like to really relieve your minds about that, because any woman who was really devoted to finding the one God would have been able to beautifully use that time to tremendous help, oftentimes did so in a greater degree than the gentleman that left to do his wanderings.
Another example of the irony that we find in the world.
Yes, things are usually not as they seem. You can almost always bet that it's upside down perception of it. The one who seems to be, you know, the one who seems to have a very smooth and easy life is probably the one who is really not getting very far.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't mean that you have to have tragedies in their life, but there is a certain kind of intensive pitch that goes with someone who is really seeking the one God. It's a tension within, and it comes from being so aware of one's own crystallizations, as we spoke of, that they're in the last time that we worked together.
Oh yes.
That one is so aware of their own crystallizations and is watching the movements of their mind to guard against allowing negative thoughts in. Because as I hope I have said this before, and if not, I would like to say it now. One of the greatest aids to really breaking free of old habitual thought patterns, which tie you so badly to, you realize that if the thought pattern continues, then the body action continues. And the way to stop a body action is not to stop it in the body necessarily, but to stop it in the mind.
Mm-hmm.
It is the mind that creates the desire, and then the body acts it out. So the real movement is in the mind. And the way, what is the way to guard against this? Well, it's very simple. This is where all of these devices come together. You know, the Vipassana, the Zen, and the Christian, all of them come together in a deep focus on the moment. If you are really either the Bhakti who is surrendering every thought to God and allowing God to think through him, or else if you're the Vipassana, which is this hawk alert for the rabbit on the ground. In this case, I'm speaking of the devotee or the aspirant who is watching his thoughts,
mm-hmm.
being very aware that he's going to not allow this negative drifting of negative thought to overtake him.
Mm-hmm.
It is this pitch of tension that you find in the real disciple. In the real, you know, the real aspirant will have that. For many years, will have that high pitch. Now, it's true when the union is made and the joy and the is upwelling and so forth. Then one sees difference. So one sees a softness of face and a loftiness and a peace, and the eyes reflect peace and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
But that is an end product, my friend. That is not an intermediary product. That is an end product. At the beginning, you have the frenzied chaos of too much energy dissipated in too many areas.
Mm-hmm.
Then in the middle stages, you have this inner tension, this alertness, this striving to keep guard over, because now you realize that you are responsible for the thoughts that you harbor, that not only
yes.
are you responsible, but they can be strictly considered as your children.
Right.
And they will bring home things to you that you never dreamt of.
Mm-hmm.
And it depends on what kind of children you give birth to, as to what kind of life you will live. If your life is filled with chaos and resentment and anger and other people prodding you and so forth, be aware that these are your children come home to roost.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone listening to this tape, do not make the mistake of saying it is other people's problems. You are reaping what you have sown, and this is the law. This is the law you have placed yourself under. And be aware that it is the law that will liberate you, but in the intermediate stages it can be very unsettling. But realize that if you are getting any response from others of a negative nature, if you find yourself in a situation that much negativity is coming to you, the first response is, oh my, those people are terrible. The real and true disciple will say, no, not true. I'm reaping what I have sown, and I must accept it.
Mm-hmm.
And I accept it with love and joy and absolutely no feeling of disharmony at all. I will simply take it in and understand that it is necessary, and I will do my best to hold only lofty and uplifting thoughts on behalf of my brother who seems at this time to be attacking me.
Right.
And just keep this as lofty as you can. Whatever is happening in your life, whatever tragedy is befalling you, understand that it is a dual purpose. God is always using these things for dual purposes. No karmic debt needs just simply stand as a karmic payment. In it, as we've spoken of before, holds the embryonic form of the birth of the light.
Mm-hmm.
And use each one of these. Just use every one of them as they come along.
Yes.
And see what your involvement is. Take it in and say, now where, how does this feel? For example, let me use an example of the woman. The other night she had a dream about two old friends who are now together, and in the dream these two friends were being very venomous against her, and she woke up very unhappy. And she dealt with it during the day in various ways, trying to understand what the meaning of it was.
I see.
And later on that night in her meditation, it was all made very clear. This, in the past, she had sent out to the two of them, not together, not as a pair, but separately, some negative thoughts. And this is what is coming back. And it is perhaps true that they are together speaking in negative terms of her. It doesn't matter, and she knows it.
Mm-hmm.
It is a clearing up. She accepted that into her being. She lifted it up in gratitude and said, thank you for allowing me to repay this.
Mm-hmm.
I surrender all debts. We are now clear. I will no longer harbor negative thoughts about you, nor will I accept negative thoughts from you.
Mm-hmm.
It is a debt being paid, extracted. She understood it. Do you see? This is the kind of attitude that everyone needs to... I'm not emulating her and holding her up as some kind of lofty example. I'm simply saying that this is a very immediate thing that I hope will be helpful.
Yes.
Remember, your dreams are often used as a hookup between people and can often be taken as valid. And you should not just pass them off totally. You know, I don't mean you should be morbid with your dreams, but I do mean that oftentimes, if you wake up and they still are with you, that there is usually some kind of a hope there that you should hook up to the meaning of that dream.
Do you work through dreams with disciples?
We work every way we can. If a disciple is open to the dream state and seems to be to feel that this is the meaningful part of their life, then we'll move in and use that. We would prefer direct contact because dreams can be interpreted as meaningless or can be badly and misinterpreted.
Right.
But we do our best. And if we run into a beloved one who is very much caring about that, then we will use that.
I see.
But the warp is greater. There's a understanding warp that can take place there. Oftentimes what we will do is use the dream state and you will not remember. And that's when it's perhaps the best, is that we are able to impress on you in your deep sleep state, we are able to work with you. And much of our work is done with you, with all of you, with everyone on the earth plane. Were it not for the dream state, I've said before, you would go mad.
Mm-hmm.
If you did not have the opportunity to sleep and to put it all down every night, you would go mad. There's no way you could sustain this illusion. And instead of being able to break out of it in a joyful, uplifting, clear, and free way, you would all find yourself in such total chaos and disharmony that you would be in serious mental problems. So this is the need for the sleep. This is the need for the deep sleep that has no dreams, that is simply an opening up to, and the teaching goes on at that time. This is why many times you will go to bed with a problem and wake up with it resolved. There's nothing magic about it. The answer has been presented. We have shared in the communion of the understanding on the deeper planes, and you're free of it.
I see.
And then you expedite it. Now, you don't recall this, and it's not necessary that you do. No one needs to recall this. It's just the acknowledging in the morning of the release from the tension and an understanding that this is the benevolent will of the one God to help you. The only reason that deep sleep was brought into createdness was because of God's willing, just absolute yearning to commune with you at some time.
Mm-hmm.
And this is when it's done. This is when the communing takes place. I'm not saying you can go all the way to the source. No, but I am saying that you can go very far higher during the deep sleep state than you can during your astral dream state or in the so-called awakening state on the earth plane.
Has this been pointed out in the, I think there's a Hindu tradition of the different stages of consciousness that are available to everyone on the mundane level of waking, sleeping, and in sleeping, I think they distinguish between the dream state and then this other state,
the deep sleep.
The deep sleep.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is, of course, beloved Satguru Ramana Maharshi, and this is he made good use of this illustration all during his lifetime, and it is very valid, and he is trying to use this again as an analogy, and it holds. You know, are you aware of yourself in deep sleep? Is anything there in deep sleep? Are you aware of anything? You know, you're not. You have, and the fact is, you don't have access to that area of deep sleep. Now, the true disciple will more and more have access to the deep areas of sleep. But that's another point, because none of you listening to this tape are in that position yet. You know, but that is one of the end hallmarks of the true disciple, the true aspirant, who is able in all to feel the reality of the deep sleep much more real and meaningful than than the astral dream state or in the waking state. You know, they will understand and be able to take from and embody the movement and truth of that deepest state and embody it through the other states. And in doing so, consciously able to transmute and change, you know, by putting that energy into the earth plane, consciously able to make changes, unutterably beautiful changes. This is what the Maharshi was always able to do. It's a matter of bringing, of retaining the power. You see, right now you do it unconsciously. So much of what humans do is unconscious.
Yes.
You know, you tap in on these deep truths, but it's in an unconscious state. And this is very true. And as you become more and more, move more and more into rarefied atmospheres, you'll be more and more able to bring it back with you, in a sense. This is why the deep meditator is not doing anything if he cannot somehow bring that back into the earth, into the earth plane. And that's a matter of how pure his thoughts are. If his mind is, no matter how deeply you meditate, you know, if your thoughts and actions are impure in the sense that they're very earth oriented, you're not going to be able to hold that. The vibration that you tap in your deep state, you're not able to bring it into the continuance of the earth plane. It's simple. You know, they have many examples of the great meditators all over the world who meditate for 2 weeks, and the minute they come out, the first thing they do is stumble on a rock and swear.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these are old bona fide stories going way back, and it's the same thing. That all that means is that their work on the earth plane isn't sufficiently done. They're taking it, they're going too fast. Mm-hmm. They're moving to lofty heights before they've worked out some of their movement on the earth plane.
Shall I go on to another question?
Certainly, if you feel we've covered that. Well, I know one question will come up. Well, how best can we expedite this deeper dream state? And I think I've mentioned before, and if not, I'd like to say now, it's the same as anything else. Ask and you shall receive. As you go off into your deep, into your sleep, if you could meditate before you go to bed, this is the most expedient way. It isn't terribly helpful to have a lot of frenzied activity right before the dream state.
Right.
Because then that whole area of your life is for example, any kind of deep physical relationship right prior to sleep often takes you, I mean, that's fine, but I mean, it's not going to bring you the deep sleep state you want.
Right.
And so whatever time you can spend in deep meditation right prior to sleep, and then before going into the sleep state, just to make an acknowledgement within your being that this is what you seek,
mm-hmm.
that you seek the deepest awareness of that state. And it slowly it will come. Patience, patience. You know, it's taken lifetimes and lifetimes to build this structure. So don't be so impatient if it takes one or two moments to dissolve it.
Bartholomew, you spoke in passing about, well, you talked about family relationships in different respects, and you spoke not too long ago about the difference that exists between the dynamics and relationships within a family, within the family, and then relationships with people outside the family. And I wonder if you could add any comments to that. There is certainly a distinction to be made between those types of relationships.
Well, what is very interesting from our point of view is that those people who are in your immediate environment, the ones that you say you love, human beings now, not you, I'm speaking of all human beings, the ones that you say you love are the ones who you are usually the rudest to. This is something that we look at and puzzle over greatly, because you use those closest to you as a safety valve to get rid of some of the angers and anxieties and resentments and hatreds that you build up with other people. And I think it would be worthwhile for everyone who is a sincere aspirant to look closely at this, because I feel that this is a deceit on your parts. On all of you listening, this is deceitful. It is a deceitful thing to say, now this person or this group of persons I really love. And then follow out how you do it. Who is the one that you pick on the most? Who is the one that you do the most correcting? Who is the one that you use any kind of little fits of anger? I mean, I'm not speaking, many people don't have great anger. They have little anger. Little anger is the same as great anger. It doesn't matter. It still represents hatred and resentment and unreconciled conflicts.
Mm-hmm.
And people say, oh, It's just our way of relating. Well, if that is the truth, then I think you should look at the way you're relating, because this is not a reflection of true relationship. Mm-hmm. And we, in a sense, we have observed that you use each other in this way, and it is not a positive use. Am I making this clear?
Yes.
That I feel that the people that you state that you love are the ones that you should guard the most against your own bad temper, your own little ego movements. Mm-hmm. You say, oh, but then that will jeopardize my job. If I do this out in the world, well, other people won't care about me. Mm-hmm. You know, my job, my boss won't like me, or the postmaster won't like me, or my friends won't like me, or so on. And I say, listen to what you're saying. You are saying that you care more. You claim that you love this one person or these few persons. You claim this. This is your claim. And yet your actions do not hold to that. And you say, but part of loving them is to be able to share with them and to be very frank with them and to just say what I want and so on. And I say, you can call that love. I do not.
Mm-hmm.
It is astonishing to those of us on the higher realms to realize that the people that you claim to love are the ones that you give the most vent to your bad side.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is worthy of consideration. I don't think I have to say very much more. I think it's very obvious that we do not consider that love. We consider that some kind of use. I've said before that most relationships on the earth plane, either between man and wife or between lovers or even between close friends, and oftentimes between parent and child and parent, are used to vent this kind of thing.
Yes.
You can do it because you think you're safe. Now, you say you're safe because they love you. I say you're safe because you have compounded a relationship that you both need each other in, and therefore feel free to use that. But I warn you, that is not the way to use a creative relationship. There's nothing creative and dynamic in that relationship. And this is why so many people stray from the relationships of marriage, for example. Therein lies the kernel of why people stray from them. You know, if people are abused, they're not going to stay in a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Unless they have somewhere in them either a very deep understanding of the need to reconcile this within themselves, which is very rare, or a deep desire to be hurt,
mm-hmm.
which is a different motive altogether. But the usual person, if you miss...